Welcome to the Engadget podcast. This is episode 23, Leaving Las Vegas. We are once again at CES, as we have been all week. I am joined by Christopher Trout, executive editor.
Prepared to drink myself to death, as per the name of the podcast.
Yeah. I was going real dark.
Yeah, apparently.
Editor-in-chief Michael Gorman.
What's happening?
And managing editor Dana Woolman.
Yo, we survived.
We did. Well, it's not quite over yet. The show does technically go on for one more day.
Yes, there's
still time to die.
Yeah. Still time for somebody to kill you.
In addition to this being our CES podcast, Gorman and Trout, you're not just here because you're the bosses and we needed to have you on. You're here because you're also the first and last place in Flame Wars.
And I would like to file what's about to be said and happen under here under protest. I got screwed on multiple occasions, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
And I would like to collect my prize.
Yes. So for those who haven't watched the podcast before CES, because we haven't been doing it all week, Flame Wars is a segment where we debate the big stories of the week. It is purely an intellectual exercise. We don't necessarily believe these things, but we keep track and we keep score, and we've had a running leaderboard on the site the entire time.
The judging, I would like to emphasize, is super subjective.
It is. It is the most subjective. And since Michael Gorman came in last and Christopher Trout came in first.
Shenanigans.
Trout gets to demand whatever he wants of Gorman, basically.
I was going to go with foot massage, but I wore the wrong boots this week, and I've got blisters all over my feet, so you won't be seeing my pedicure.
Who breaks in a new set of shoes at CES? That's what I want to know.
Who names their kid Trout?
Also, who names your child?
Two very good unanswerable questions.
But we're going to go for an over-the-clothes shoulder rub, so get to work. Do I turn around, or do we
you got to turn around. I can't get up and walk back there. The mic won't work, so talk amongst yourselves.
Well, Gorman does that.
Pay this debt that I don't actually have, but I'm going to anyway because I'm such a good sport.
Well, Gorman does that. We're going to reiterate for the listeners at home that Gorman is a trained attorney who managed to, despite all his professional arguing skills, come in last in this onggoing competition.
I'm an actual licensed courtroom attorney, and somehow... This is what I'm saying. I'm filing under protest. You cheated me this year, Dana.
Maybe you're just
you
not
judge
a very
wrong.
Good lawyer.
I'm super compelling.
Get to work, and let's talk about some gadgets or something.
Yeah.
Come on. People didn't come here to see me get a massage.
Well, while this is going on, let's make it super creepy. And, he's getting real in there. This is good. Dana is very uncomfortable. And let's make Dana more uncomfortable. Let's talk about sex and porn and stuff.
Okay. Like, I haven't been doing that for the past hour up here with everybody that I've talked to.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I don't know how practical this massage is. So what do you want to talk about?
Leading up to CES, you published a piece sort of detailing the history of pornography and the sex industry and AVN and it separating from CES and how it kind of vanished from the show floor.
Yeah.
So how long ago did they separate again?
So, I'll give you the cliffs notes of
the
story,
long didn't read
but
version.
Basically, AVN, which is the adult video conference or the adult news conference.
Which grew out of CES.
Okay, I can't concentrate when you're touching me like that. So, we'll pick this up in the trailer. But what happened was, back in the 80s, like 1982, 84, somewhere around there, when VHS and Betamax were at war, which is a very commonly told story that I don't have to repeat, but basically there was an adult video section within CES. It was actually part of CES, and it broke away in 1998 when one of the exhibitors decided that he was going to start AEE as a result of feeling like they were kind of not being given the same treatment as other technology companies, right? So Paul Fishbein spun out, did his own thing, up until 2011, and then 2011 he sold the company, and they basically that year the new management decided that AVN would no longer run at the same time as CES, and at that point there was basically no representation of sort of sex products or any of that for a while. Then Suki and Brian Dunham, the people at Oh My Bod, who have their booth here and have for 6 years, decided that they were going to come to CES and do it legit, and they did, and they've been doing it since then. So they've been here for about 6 years, quietly kind of doing their thing until last year. You know, we talked to them, a couple of other companies, I think like Vice did a piece on them, and they've really gotten this like mainstream recognition here that didn't really exist for sex or sex products before. And then this year, for the first time since 1998, there is a porn company showing in the South Hall in a conference room. They're called Naughty America. They're doing virtual reality porn. It's, you know, not 360 degree porn. It's like 180. But honestly, it's probably the best stuff that I've seen. Like, it's the most well shot, right? Because it's very easy to shoot a human poorly in virtual reality. Yeah. You end up with warped faces, you end up with like strangely large breasts, or, you know, somebody whose torso is 5 feet long or whatever, and that's not very sexy.
And you don't really need 360 probably for VR porn.
I just think, like, why not take advantage of the whole thing, right? Like, why wouldn't you? Otherwise, what is 180? It's like, whatever. It's like,
yeah,
being
but
in a...
I assume you're going to be looking at the subject of set. You're not really interested on what's going on the set.
Well,
behind
this
you.
This comes to a key issue for me when it comes to this stuff, which is everybody's using pornography and virtual reality in a POV sort of sense, right? So
yeah.
you're this sort of disembodied, or there's a body, right, with no head and usually no torso, and you're just looking down, you see your genitals, and a person is basically coming at you and doing all the things to you. And we were talking to Kelly Holland, the CEO of Penthouse, yesterday, because they're doing something a little bit different, which is basically they're creating these scenes, right? These sort of like full-on sex scenes where everywhere you turn, there's some other kind of thing going on.
Okay.
A carnival of sex, if you will, I believe is how
right.
it's
a carnival
bit,
of sex?
It's a little bit more voyeuristic. It's like you're there, but you're not necessarily... They're not trying to create you within it, right?
Okay.
You are the voyeur. You're the person watching. You're the person kind of in the corner or like in the middle of things, just kind of experiencing it as a scene. So I'm curious, though. I know that Michael's seen virtual reality pornography.
I have.
Dana, have you seen it?
I have not. I've just edited your column a million times. And so I've vicariously experienced
it. Which is an interesting... I don't know if we're going to get too deep in the weeds if we talk about it, but honestly, it is a very strange relationship that you have with your editor when you write about sex for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this is anything that you ever expected to do.
No, but it's a change of pace from gadgets, right?
Yeah. I mean, I talk about gadgets, let's be real. Like...
Sexy gadgets.
An internet-connected male masturbator is still a gadget.
Yeah.
Very much
so. I mean, that's 100% a gadget. I had the pleasure of editing one of them recently, and I was like...
Pleasure. See, yeah. And every time, everything you say sounds dirty when you're talking about
it.
It does. But no, I mean, I agree. It's sort of a weird thing to end up doing. Like, it's not a TV, but it's also a nice change of pace. It's... Because I think also a lot of times you're not just talking about gadgets and stuff. You're talking about the impact this has, and, you know, it's very sex positive. And it's, I don't know, I love the column. Like, it's one of my favorite things we publish.
Aww.
I can take it or leave it.
And to be clear, I'm not sex positive. My column is.
Yeah.
I'm extra sex negative. So, yeah, I mean, like, the interesting thing, though, this year is that, like, last year I think I saw a handful of things that were sort of sex-related products.
Yeah.
This year, there are two companies showing on the show floor. I haven't heard of or seen a whole lot going on outside, like in meeting rooms or anything like that. And honestly, I don't know what it is. I think it's this weird, uncomfortable relationship that the tech industry has with sex, right? And I don't know that that will ever be resolved.
Yeah.
Or that there will ever again be a really big presence for these sorts of products at CES.
I don't know that there will be either, but I always found it sort of interesting and, to be blunt about it, kind of hypocritical in a way that they kind of frown upon and shun these companies and, you know, the pornography studios. And then you walk through the booths and... I won't name names, but, like, you have women in skimpy outfits as mermaids just for no reason luring people over.
Sure.
And to be clear, I think you need to be 18 to even enter CES, right? So there's,
this is true.
Not,
oh, do you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is definitely an adult zone by default. It's not a family-friendly place.
Well, I mean, I think the idea is they're trying to portray it as being family friendly, even though if you're a kid, you can't get in. But I mean,
I had no idea about that.
What?
I didn't realize that it was an 18 plus. This is not an all ages show.
No, it is not. I mean, what was that?
That was an electrical fart.
It's the Ford. That's the Ford booth doing their thing again.
Oh.
Doing Thanks. Their thing as in like letting
some
steam
out.
Sound
effects, yeah.
That literally just broke my train of thought completely. It is good, though, I think, that we've seen sort of a decline in the Booth Babe thing a little bit. I mean, they're still out there. You can still find them, but it is less and less.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it as much this year. I don't know. I mean, I haven't been out on the show floor very much, though. I mean, have you seen many?
You know, I've seen women as, like, helpers, as, like, Vanna White style.
Yeah.
You know, people who show off the devices. I haven't seen anything too egregious in terms of, like, the outfits the women are wearing. So that alone might be a slight improvement. But there definitely are still young women, pretty women, used as sort of props or helpers in that sense.
Do you guys remember last year there was a TV company or a display company that had, like...
All the weird images?
It was, like, basically 1-900 commercials without the 1-900 plastered across it.
In, like, flowing pastel background.
Yeah, right. It was, like, softcore porn without the actual nudity, basically.
Who was that?
I think it was some...
I want to say it was Hair, maybe?
Oh, I think you might be right.
Hire, I think.
Hire, whatever it is. Yeah. Mispronouncing things is super something I do all the time.
Speaking of Hair, we were going to talk about some really ridiculous gadgets.
Oh.
Right?
Excellent segue, sir.
Thank you. I'm the master of segues. I have a fleet of segues at home, actually. Yeah. Sorry, that was so, so bad.
Yes.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Let's talk about ridiculous gadgets.
Well, clearly you want to talk about this hairbrush.
I guess. Does anybody know what it does?
The hairbrush. I just cannot believe that they put a microphone in a hairbrush to listen to yourself brush
your
hair.
So give us a rundown of everything about this for those who are unaware.
So the hairbrush, I cannot for the life of me remember the name of the company that did it. But
it's L'Oreal, Kerastase, and
Kerastase. That was the word I was looking for. Okay. And it has a few sensors in it. So it like looks like a normal hairbrush. It costs $200. It has
accelerometer, gyroscope.
That's right.
All those sensors.
And then a microphone embedded like in the like where the bristles are to listen to you as you pull it through your hair to tell you like if you're brushing too hard. Somehow?
It's like if you're brushing too hard or if your hair is brittle, which, by the
way,
look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Or touch your head a couple times and then get out the door.
It can analyze the angle. It can also tell if your hair is too wet or too dry.
Again, can't you tell if your hair is too wet or too dry? Did you lose your sense of touch?
I don't know. This is one of the most mind-boggling things I've seen at the show.
It feels very much like a solution in search of a problem. Like, no one asked for this.
Like,
except for somebody at L'Oreal. Somebody at L'Oreal was like, let's find a way to put Bluetooth inside of the brush.
Three of the four people on this stage already have fabulous hair.
This
so
is
of course,
true.
This is
true.
Not a product for.
You have great hair, too. It's just short.
Yeah, I mean, I did cut it off ahead of the show because... Because
you're
know
a quitter.
Why.
I keep trying to tell you to grow it out.
Well, I mean, it's going to grow out. I do it every winter. I cut it down a little bit, and then I just let it go. I'm not going to get another haircut until, like, March, probably.
You should just let it go until CES next year.
You know what our readers really want to hear about?
Our hair.
Your grooming technique,
so
Joe.
Much.
Hey, this is what the podcast is for, man.
Yeah.
Really letting
digressions.
It all hang out. All right, so let's move on from the brush and talk about something else ridiculous.
I don't know. What have you seen, Dana? What's been absurd?
So it's absurd, but there's a small part of me that actually wants this. I really kind of liked the voice-controlled trash can.
Okay. Explain.
No.
It's a no, I mean, ultimately because there are trash cans with foot pedals where I can just step on it and open it still in a hands-free sort of way. But
right.
Kind of like the idea.
What's the magic word to make it do it, or can you set your own? Is it just like open trash can or something?
No, I believe you could say open sesame or something to it.
Something cute like that,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was just open.
I mean, yeah, but if you say open sesame, you could say... open asshole too if you wanted to. And it would probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people are going to open it just like accidentally all the time when they just say the word open in conversation.
Or like a small kid that finds out that works and they're just sitting in front of the trash can watching it open and close.
Always need to be distinguishable.
Yeah. This is why it's, you know, hey Siri and okay Google. damn it.
Did everybody's phones just go off?
Yeah.
I was waiting.
Yeah. Okay, garbage person is
yeah.
going to be.
Yeah.
So, what else did we stuff bullshit into this year?
You know what else I really loved?
What?
The graffiti bot.
Oh, the graffiti bot is pretty dope.
I didn't see that. What does it do?
It is what it sounds like. It is a bot that is out there somewhere outside the convention center, autonomously doing graffiti.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Anonymously or autonomously?
Autonomously.
Well, it's not whatever that guy's name is, Banksy.
No.
Are we sure it's not Banksy?
I mean, it might be.
What?
Autonomous and anonymous.
And is this like a Google DeepMind situation where it's like formulating pictures on its own, or is someone like programming it with what it's supposed to do? Do we know?
What's the deal with that, Terrence?
That I'm not going to lie, I'm not 100% sure. It is connected in some way for its... People are telling it what to draw, but it's not like an artist just put in a thing and it's going off and doing it.
I think, though, similar to Google's AI-generated artwork, it's not very artistic. It's really pretty colors and neatly done, but not what you would call... it's all a little reductive, but that's just me going into art critic mode.
But it is, I don't know, there's some very big contemporary artists whose careers can be described exactly that way.
So, yeah.
You know?
There are humans who fall into the same...
Right, and they make mega $1 million off of it.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when your robot starts to make money for you? That's the robot I want.
But you know, there was a car concept shown off here. I think it may have been Honda, where the car can go and pick up passengers Uber style while you're at work and make you money.
Right. Yep.
While you're off not using the car
yourself.
The new
V, I believe.
So the question there is, do you trust a bunch of strangers in your car when you're not in it?
Nope.
I mean,
I guess
if the car is going to tell you if they misbehave.
Well, you can get one of those home security drones that we saw pop up if they misbehave, tell them something.
I mean, it's like Airbnb for cars, basically, right? Yeah. People trust people in their homes when they're not there. I mean, usually, anytime I've used an Airbnb, the owner of the apartment is not, like, sleeping in the bed next to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. I would have to clear out my drawers or something. I don't want everybody knowing what's in there.
Well, maybe it's just an income-generating car. It's like your second vehicle that you just permanently rent out.
Oh, I could do that.
You know? Yeah. Just own an autonomous car that earns you money. That's all it does.
Get yourself like a Ford Fiesta or something.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to make autonomous Ford Fiestas?
No, they don't.
No.
Okay, that was dumb. What else was dumb?
Oh, I mean, I could keep going with the weird stuff. For the viewers at
home,
I am the Engadget staffer who has read every single CES-related post.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of relying on you because I've read
a very tiny handful. I've read all the things.
Fired.
Yep.
Did you see that thing? It looks like a BDSM gadget. It looks like someone's being gagged.
Oh,
yes.
And actually,
it's super Hannibal Lecter, Clarice.
You know, you speak into this thing that stretches across your face, and what it allows you to do is carry on a phone call in an open office layout, like what we have in Gadget, and you can carry on your conversation without annoying the people around you.
What is it called? It's called Hush Me or something like that, I think?
Yeah, it's called Hush Me, which is also the name of torture porn, I think.
I mean, it sounds about right.
Do we know how loud? Can you, like, put it on, like, if you get angry at work and just start screaming into it?
Oh, you need one of those.
Yeah. This would be very helpful for me. This is why I'm very interested in this.
I mean, to be clear,
there's no privacy shield covering the area from your nose up to here, so you'd still be telling an angry story with your eyebrows and your other facial.
But if I can somehow learn to smile with my eyes as I'm screaming with my mouth, then I'm good.
Or you could just get Botox so it doesn't move up here.
Perma surprise.
Why don't we see more plastic surgery gadgets here?
Because what would that be?
I don't know, like a new Botox delivery drone or. Like,
that sounds super dangerous. You want a machine sticking your face with needles?
Samsung
really?
We trust robots to do surgery on us.
That's true. There's the Da Vinci or whatever it is.
I guess as long as it's operated by, like, a trained physician.
What's the point of having a robot if you have to operate it?
It allows you more fine-grained control. Yeah.
As Terrence proved, some of us get the shakes when yeah. we're pouring. You know what I'm saying?
I'm actually not too bad today.
Yeah, that was good.
Pretty steady.
But that's why some doctors, they shouldn't be out of the game just because they lost a little bit.
How complicated is Botox injection that you'd need a robot to do it anyway?
I don't know. Let's ask somebody who knows.
Anybody out there have Botox?
Anybody? Show of hands. Not something people want to talk about.
Not a lot of Botox people here at CES.
So, Dana, I want to talk about one other thing. Sorry,
sure.
I hijacked your show.
Cool.
I want to talk about an unexpected gadget that you've gotten very excited about. We at first kind of all laughed a little bit when we heard about it, I think. And then it was like, oh, shit, this is, like, actually useful.
Yeah.
The breast pump.
The Willow, yeah. Yeah, I mean, at first we would roll our eyes. We're like, oh, great, another smart thing. Everything has to be smart these days. But actually, a smart breast pump makes sense just because until now they've all been tethered to a wall outlet. So if it's time for a woman to pump, and nursing women pump several times a day, it means you stop what you're doing. You're at your desk or you're at your dining room table. You're not moving for a while. Maybe you can read magazines or work on a laptop. But that's it. I mean, you're sort of parked. And this, instead these devices slip into your bra and do the work, allowing you to still move around and maybe do other things with your hands still free.
And they're also a lot lower profile, right? Like, aren't other breast pumps just bigger and more
awkward
generally?
Yeah, it's like a test tube sort of dangling off.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't really care about the aesthetics as much as some other people. At least
right.
At least if you're in the comfort of your own home, perhaps if you're nursing at work in the office, which many women are,
yeah.
you would want as portable and discreet as of a device as possible.
Yeah.
And this thing, it looks ergonomic. It conforms to the shape of the breast, slips into the bra in a, I don't think anybody's used it on our staff yet, but in a pretty inconspicuous way.
Yeah.
They're already nursing bras, right, which have sort of a slot that makes it easy to take the boob in and out. So this probably, too, would be easy enough to sort of put in and take out. Not that you'd wear it on you all day. It doesn't sound very comfortable having pieces of plastic against your chest all day.
Right. No, I can see how that might be a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We are getting the wrap-up sign.
Already?
I blame this on you.
Yeah.
It's all going down after this.
So I guess just before we go, because this is the last podcast of the week.
Ever.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about CES in general? Are you feeling okay about it?
I feel great, mostly because I made you guys do all the work.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How about you, Gorman?
I mean, it's been a really good show. I've been very excited with all the awesome guests we've had on stage here, pumped to do the awards later on this evening, 5 p.m. Y'all check it out, the best of CES.
Yeah, everybody's got to tune in for that.
Yeah, but it's been a very good show, other than the fact that we had to fly in on the 1st, and we're not flying out until Monday. That's been kind of a bummer, but otherwise, the show's been good.
Yeah. Dana? How you feeling?
I mean, I'd say we came, we saw, and we saw.
And we saw.
And we're still seeing.
And we're still seeing, and hopefully it's been fun for readers at home to sort of enjoy the show in a less stressful way than it would be for us, where you can just sort of digest it all at your own leisure.
Yeah. What about you, Terrence?
I mean, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm pretty beat, but that's just CES every year. There's not a lot of sleep, a whole lot of work. I got to drink scotch with Nick Offerman, so nothing else fucking matters.
Yeah. That was a good day.
So it's all over. It's all downhill from here for you,
yeah, that's
right?
Pretty much it.
You peaked.
Yep.
Life pinnacle
I'm done.
Reached.
All right, so that is it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for the massage.
Thank you, guys.
You're very welcome.